Hello, witches. This is Kara Kovacs, and this is Business Witch. As a third-generation witch, at least, and a business and life coach for mission-driven entrepreneurs and leaders, I teach you how to make money and magic as liberatory practices. Because when we know, seek, and embrace our full potential, we create a better world for everyone. Here you'll find tools, conversations, spells, and inspiration that take you from waiting to creating so you can build the business and life you're oh so worthy and capable of having. Let's go. Hello, Bewitchers. Before we get into today's content, I just wanted to thank you for listening and let you know that if you want to support a small business owner, the best way to do that is to share about their work. In this case, I deeply appreciate your 5-star reviews on your preferred streaming platforms, resharing episodes like this one to your social media stories. I promise to reshare. Or if you feel so called to stay connected, I give free love notes with lots of business tips, advice, prompts, free classes, access to insider information on my email list every single week. You can head to www.karakovacs.com to subscribe. You'll get a curated list of our favorite episodes of this show, as well as access to lots of classes, a library of past free workshops, and tons of information to support you in your own small business journeys. So thanks so much in advance for hanging out with us on all the places, Instagram, email, and here at the podcast. Let's get into the show. Hello, witches. As always, it is such a joy to be with you today. Maybe you're taking us on a walk, maybe you're taking us on a drive, but in either case, I have a very, very special guest to introduce you to, and I can't wait to hear what comes from this conversation. She is an interdisciplinary artist, and she has so much beautiful wisdom to share. It is my pleasure to welcome Neha Misra to Business Witch. Hello.
Hi, Kara. Hi, business witches, witch continue to move through movements and stillness of life. Thank you so much for having me here. Thank you for listening, wherever those listening might be, in the planet, in the galaxy, in the multiverse.
Even that, I think people can tell from your introduction that you are a poet, because that was beautiful. But tell the people about your work, please.
Yeah, so first, I like to root in my name itself, which is, you know, my name Neha. It comes from Sanskrit, which is the language of my ancestors. And to me, it is most connected with my Nani, my maternal grandmother, who is one with the stars now, where we shall all return to. I like to think and believe and feel. So Neha means love. And I feel it is most beautiful, profound, hard, all of it, work of life to embody love in our beautiful, difficult, mad, and mysterious world. So with love, who I am in the world is, as the containers evolve, you know, as they do for all of us, through different seasons of life. I'm a first generation immigrant. I am a contemporary eco-folk artist and a poet and a climate justice advocate. And I feel those threads of being and doing in their wholeness are really important to me. And my studio practice as a person and being practicing the art of life itself is really to center Mother Earth wisdom and to use and embody and practice the transformative power of art to build bridges between our private, collective, planetary healing. And healing is deeply tied to justice and liberation. So the containers are multitudes for me, because we are multitudes. We are multiverses, each of us and together as well. And the connecting thread is that our micro and macro healing is deeply connected. There is no healing ourselves without healing Mother Earth, and there's no healing Mother Earth without healing ourselves. So I feel my whole practice is about transcending false binaries, you know, whether it's like the false binary of East versus West, or past or future, or physics or metaphysics. I studied physics in my undergrad in Delhi many, many, many moons ago. So I love physics and metaphysics of my life are merging with time, which is a beautiful state of business witching.
I love it when people use it as a verb. It's a verb. What I was struck by in what you said, I mean, there were many things, but I think it might be resonant for my audience, is I have clients so often come to me and they say things like, I have so many ideas, I don't know which one to follow, or I like want to incorporate all of my gifts into this thing that I want to build. And the way that you just introduced yourself, there was a sort of seamlessness through tying together all of your interests and all of your work. It's cohesive in the experience of it. And, you know, we're going to link your website so people can go listen to the poetry and look at the art. But for people who are getting stuck, maybe that's a false binary too, that they have to pick a particular way to express their own magic in the world. If you have any thoughts for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel it has been work of a lifetime, and it is work of a lifetime and a labor of love and love of labor to come to the essence of that thread, that through different seasons of life, the containers might evolve and shift. But for me, like holding what is the thread, and I think can feel and know this time, I feel really incredibly powerful in my life to embody wholeness, which has been deeply calling to me in this season of life. Because in the past, I feel we live in a reductionist world, you know, which is forever trying to reduce us and fragment us, because as a reflection of itself, because so much of our world is fragmented and reductionist. So I feel it has taken a lot of work of integration for myself, which is what last few years I have been called to, because there was a period, even though I have always been a creature of passion and purpose, you know, how I live this brief time in this avatar here. But I feel there was a time when I would be in these circles where I would be a poet, and people there may not even know that I'm an artist or like a climate justice advocate, or I would be in movement spaces. I've done climate justice and feminist sustainable energy organizing all of my adult life. And a lot of those spaces, people would not know that I'm also an artist, or like I'd be in visual art spaces and people won't know. And not just because one is systemic, you know, how systems chop us and where what systems and conditions and eco beings allow us to inhabit our wholeness. And if one is not deeply mindful, the chopping, the reductionism can become internal. So I feel like for me in this season of life, it's about integration and wholeness. And I feel after a lot of challenges and trials, which is part of, you know, forever coming of age, I feel I'm glad to have arrived here where I know the thread of my life. And the thread is, we were talking about verbs, that beauty is a verb. So my core thread is that a beauty is a verb. Beauty is, like, for me, who I am and how I live and be in the world. And sometimes that beauty manifests through a poem that heals me, and maybe somebody hears it and says, oh, wow, thank you for saying something I have felt and never expressed before, you know. Or that beauty can be a painting that makes somebody like gasp, like, ah, like looking at colors. or that beauty can be the work of social justice, the work of ecological justice, the work which is deeply tied. I feel the work of climate justice for me is tied to spirituality. It is tied to multiple crises of our times, right? And multiple chasms of our times in the world. So, you know, they say how like to arrive also at something simple, sometimes it just takes such deep, complex work, right? So I feel to arrive at that essence, and you're clearly a very keen listener. It has taken, I feel a lot of inner, outer, liminal work and practice and contemplation, which I have to continue to be mindful about. That my thread is beauty and how I create beauty and how I be with beauty, how I inhabit beauty, that is a shape-shifting creature of the moon.
And also Venus, which I don't know if you are already aware of this or not, but Libra, your sun sign, is ruled by Venus, the planet of beauty. So maybe some synastry there.
That's lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. And Venus teaches us about beauty. That is the gift of Venus. So maybe something there for you to, I like to commune with the planets and harness the energy of planets in my work. And so just wanted to offer you that.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, I'm a student of planets and the universe, you know? And yeah, I feel it's a boundless ocean, right? To know, or even where you don't know, to just be with the mystery, right?
Yes. And also something I want to share with listeners too is a lot of people would have no idea what astrology and witchcraft has to do with business building and feminism. And I wove all of those things together into this platform. And so I think to speak to what you were saying about fragmentation is maybe it's not rationing off parts of yourself to try to make the offer sellable, but rather thinking about, I like to use the metaphor of like cooking. If you were to mix all of these things into a dish, like how would they taste delicious? And that might be the most nourishing thing that you could give yourself and the people who need the work that you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I use my very dear beloved artist friend, like Joyfully Last, I use a lot of weaving metaphors. And so, yeah, like weaving, right? Like it's like making a tapestry from or a mosaic or a quilt out of these different elements, you know, of us. And sometimes our work is, the deep work is to know what is my thread, you know, through the changes of life, you know?
So you were talking right before we came on about being versus doing, which is something we hear very often in the coaching industry too, around mindset work. I'd like to hear it from your perspective, and it feels related to what we were talking about already.
Yeah, it's not even versus. I would say like a being and doing, you know, because imagine like even I find, you know, when people say, how do you do? Like I like to ask, how are you being today? How is your being today? Because without really deep being and being which is connected to the self and the surrounding and the spirit, you know, however one may relate to that, I feel no doing can truly last without, you know, without being connected to the being. And of course, we live in such a frenzied, efficiency, productivity, obsessed world, you know, where like we feel like that doing is a singular focus and then doing more, you know. I like to ask people like all the time you're saving, where are you exactly investing it? What is like this constant, like, and again, it's rooted in a lack of, right? And not to diss like all of improve. I have actually a poem maybe I'll share with you. I'll pull it during our conversation, which is about this, to me, absurd, but not shocking at all, because this is the system we live in, right? The efficiency-obsessed system. It is by design, you know? if we are to go beyond it, it would also take deep design, you know, and awareness, you know.
I would love to hear a poem on the podcast because I got to hear you speak live and it's just, your words are so beautiful. So if we want to take a moment to pull that up, and then maybe after that, we can talk about, you know, when you were saying efficiency obsessed, it's, yeah, it's like, in order to feel like something is worth doing, it needs to be attached to some kind of result. And to be perfectly honest, and I can already feel I'm anticipating a response about this, I am not great at visual arts. It's not one of my talents. I'm a poet, but like drawing, no. But I think sometimes the point of doing it is not to make something beautiful. It's just very therapeutic to be engaged in a practice of doing something that is an expression of oneself and one's creativity without judging that it's going to be used for something. And I think people, because of this productivity-obsessed culture, fragment themselves from being in the practice of connecting to their own creativity because it doesn't feel worthwhile from a time perspective. And I would just love for you to school us about that.
Yeah, and cool, because I'm also learning, right? And I would say, Kara, also, you know, you're saying I'm not a visual artist. I hear you. And yet, here you are in your gorgeous room with this stunning deep blue, I feel outer inner space blue wall, which is so beautiful. It has these, I'm seeing so many patterns of beautiful plants and book. You know, also, what is visual art? Like, this is visual art. Like, to me, from my vantage where I am, I honor your words. And I'm like, oh, you are a visual artist.
I had a feeling you were going to tell me I was a visual artist. That's what I meant. I'm like, I'm anticipating how you're going to respond.
You know, I've learned this through blossoms and burns of life. We each have to arrive at where we have to arrive when we are ready. So I also don't impose that. No, let me tell you, you are. But from where I see, I also see that. And I honor your own, you know, being out yourself. And yeah, I found the poem. So should I share it with you?
Yes, please do.
So this poem is called What's Efficient? Okay, what's efficient? Part one, fast food is efficient. Yet I love the deep love of loves, known and strangers, mothers, grandmothers, in body and or heart, women of my skin color, patiently grinding spices, brewing hope from seeming thin air. But it's in reality not thin. It is the only matter that matters. It is deep. It is intergenerational. It is trauma reborn as taste of the buds, ready to soak, slow cook, spread, slow, 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 deep, deep, deep. For such is true love, slow, deep, inefficient. To love like this, what's efficient? Part two. Dictatorship is efficient. Yet, please serve me democracy with all its inefficiencies. What's efficient? Part three, silence. End of poem.
I feel like I just got such a treat. I got to be alone in a Zoom room with you while you read a beautiful poem.
Thank you for listening, my inefficient contemplation on efficiency. And Kara, I'll tell you the birth story of that poem. The birth story of that poem is in one of my life avatars. you know, of like doing. Like, you know, there was this 360 degree review, you know, those reviews where like everybody around you like gives you feedback. So this one woman gave me this feedback in the 360 review. It was not a compliment. She said that Neha spends a lot of time on relationships. But it was not a compliment. She said like she should like be more efficient and not be so relationship centered, you know. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And also I reject it. You know, I understand life is about balance, but everything is relationships. So I reject extractive, transactional ways of being for transformational ways of being. And transformation in any sphere is rooted in relationships. Relationship with ourselves that evolves and relationship with other being and people, right? So let's be more inefficient.
And that also takes time, right? Like to get to the root of what a conflict is about, or to really understand what may not be working in a system, sometimes is not an easy thing to figure out. I just think that this would be really relevant for our listeners. One of the reasons that I teach the way that I teach is because the coaching industry itself is kind of like a get-rich-quick scheme. Like monetize for conversions and sell, you know, make all this money selling as much as you can, as fast as you can. And in order to be a really grounded and impactful and effective practitioner, you need to practice, and practice takes time. And if you are selling your skill set before you've cultivated it, what are you selling? So I am a big champion of, you're not just building your fast ticket to quick money. That's not what a service-based business is about. It's about relationships. And that is something that is cultivated over the lifespan of a career. And I hope that when people hear that, it actually puts their nervous system a little bit more at ease, because I think people chasing the alternative feel out of alignment with their own integrity, because they're chasing what somebody else told them is like how to be successful in this industry, but they feel like something is off and they assume that it's themselves, but actually it's that they're operating out of their own integrity because they're not focused on relationships. They're focused on making as much money as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, that really resonates with me. You know, like those, I feel like those wellness or coaching advertisements that say, I've seen these in different parts of the world that I have lived and traveled through, you have to change nothing. But if somebody tells you, you have to change nothing, like get away from them.
The one that I get is get paid to become a spiritual shaman. And it's like, AI generated image of like a white woman with a feather headdress. And you're like, what algorithm brought me this? I mean, I guess I work in an industry that like uses the same words, but like, why is this?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
But I want to go back to creativity for creativity's sake and really inspire people to reconnect to their creative practices, because it's essential. It's not just something you do in your spare time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I really believe and feel in my bones and my soul that we are innately creative beings. There is the being again, whose creativity has been beaten out by the same extractive systems that are harming Mother Earth. Yesterday, I was on a call with my darling niece, who's just turning 5 in the next few days. And on our call on FaceTime, she's like, oh, she painted her nails blue. She painted her 2 shades of blue. And then she was having, she said, I'm having coffee now. And she had her play coffee mug, which was empty. So we were then having this make-believe coffee together. Like, oh, and then I gifted her this puzzle, which had
rainbows and unicorns with wings and people. And so she created her own avatar of that puzzle. She's like, I'm going to take it to my school tomorrow. So, you know, like, so to think of, like, when, as we are born, and children are innately creative, right? And as we get older, some of us, and it is not, again, to be mindful to not shame oneself about it. It is by very insidious design of society all around us that our creativity has been beaten out of us, you know? And creativity, I feel, one, like for me, I feel we are all artists, but okay, some people may not be there. They're like, no, I'm not at all an artist, but that's fine. If you, even if you don't feel that you are quote unquote an artist or artist of life, no matter who you are, what you do, creativity is about seeing. It's about witnessing. It's about observing. It is about meaning making, both about imagination and reimagination. And no matter who we are, where we are in our circumstances and seasons of life, we all need the power of this, both imagination and reimagination, because what is it that we have, we do not remember in the dismembered world? So there's the practice of remembering. And then it's not only reimagining what we have forgotten, but it's also imagining, because perhaps some of our world should be and can be, has never been ever in the time travels of life. And our work is, you know, to listen to what wants to reveal, and the work of revelation, you know, and no matter what one's spiritual belief, to reveal oneself to oneself, to reveal one's own calling and gifts in the world, that is a creative act. So that's where I feel for me, like the work is really to widen the circle and the circumference of that circle of what is creative and who is an artist, who gets to claim and reclaim their artistry. And yes, sometimes that can mean you paint, you take a guitar you used to play and don't anymore, or you pick up an instrument for the first time in your life, you know. It may mean going for a walk and noticing, you know, noticing trees, to look at homes and just imagine, like, who lives there? What might their life be like? And like, even like the architectures of homes, I love house gazing, just like design and making perspective, you know, and the stories, like stories that places and creations have, you know. I remember I had some plumbing issues in my home last year, and the wonderful plumber who came, you know, I thought they were so poetic, because he came and he said, Neha, you see, water is crazy, it will go anywhere. Oh. So for me, you know, everything is a poem, and it is about seeing, you know. So that's what, again, I feel like in my writing also, I don't feel poetry is something I do. It's who I am, you know. So what does it mean for you in your life? Where are the windows and doors and open fields of creativity? And maybe calling you, you know, in your own state of being, because maybe right now only you want a window. You're like, you know, just give me, I just need a window. Like, that's enough, you know? Or maybe you feel like enough of windows. I just need to go and lie down under the sky, you know? So again, I feel to have space for multitudes of being, and multitude not only expressions of creativity and how we express creativity, you know, across our private and public life, but also, yeah, a recognition that what we've been told, that creativity and artistry is only for certain people, you know, just to throw that away. And which I think brings me to another important point I think so much about, Maybe one day I want to start a school of unlearning, because there are many schools of learning, and isn't like such a big part of life to also unlearn. And as one learns, because consciously, unconsciously, so many things like we have inherited, you know, and beliefs, they might have been well-meaning or they might be past their expiry date. It might be time for a software upgrade, you know, and also to leave some and upcycle there some and tell bye to some of them, hopefully in an organic way, you know.
Yeah, so much of what you're saying to me too comes back to like personal values, which is something I teach a lot about as it relates to business. But I've also been thinking about so much so as it relates to how we live our lives. And when we look at what our society and larger culture values, like you were just talking about efficiency, for example, or like the teaching of calculus, but not how to do personal finance. Or the teaching of, lots of school subjects that we'll never use, but not how to have a difficult conversation with a loved one when you have a difference of opinion. And so when you center creativity as a personal value, and I had an actual podcast 4 years ago that is since I've removed it from the internet. So sorry, all of y'all, you can't go find it. But I remember I did an episode with Miki Agrawal, who is the inventor of Tushy, the bidets. Yes. So she was talking about on that episode, and I'll never forget this, that CEOs of companies take a quarter off, like they have designated sabbaticals in order to connect to their own creativity, because you can't birth genius ideas when you are so in the work that you're not separated from it, and that the creativity is a vital part of birthing your next great idea. And that often part of that is like drawing 100 things that you throw out, or writing 100 pages that never see the light of day. And that if you center the value of the creative process, you actually get so much closer to what is essential. But because we don't teach that or value that, it's like it wasn't good on the first draft. You can't write, waste of time.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I would say maybe some CEOs do it, but again, that's not the construct that our world is coming from and evolving from. I hope it is a like growing and deepening practice, but also in my experience, the yes and of that is that many don't. I have worked as a co-founder of a very celebrated entity in the world of energy and women's rights and climate justice. I have worked with a lot of CEOs and leaders that I have been in meeting rooms and boardrooms with. There's a pride in the workaholic culture. There's some perverse kind of, you know, like how much you have not slept and how much like you have to get on the next flight. And somebody said the other day, I love being on flights. I get the most work done on a flight. I love to watch people on flight. I love to catch up with my... And again, I'm not judging that in the sense that there is a diversity of being and our practices. But to say that a option is the option, I say also, please get away from those people who tell you the option is the option. Life is multitudes, and there are multiple ways to thrive and flourish and be wherever we are in our state of consciousness, you know?
Thank you for that. There was one more thing I really wanted to talk with you about today, and that was what I had mentioned to you before we got on about the work that people don't see that goes into building a body of work and an interdisciplinary practice that is a career and a livelihood and also personal self-expression. And I think for a lot of the people that I work with who want to build a career doing work that they feel soul called to do and that they love, feel at a loss of where to begin or what to do when they're not doing just the part that they like. So I wanted to hear maybe some of your origin story there, some practices, any guidance you feel called to give.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I want to use examples from my client roster. Like one of the reasons I'm a business coach is because so many of the healers that I work with love doing their healing. If they could, they would just sit in their beautiful offices all day doing ancestral healing work and tarot card readings and Reiki, but like the actual building of opportunities and networking and community building, they feel is either a reflection of capitalism that they don't want to participate in, or that the opportunity should be coming to them. And if they're not, they must not be meant to do said thing anyway. And they get really stuck in the part that is behind the scenes that we don't see. And I know that to have built such an incredible body of work and to have had all of these opportunities, there's so much that people don't see beyond the paintings and the poetry. And I'd love to hear from you about that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, for sharing that example. So one, I would say I'm still like a student of learning and unlearning deeply in many, many ways. You know, a metaphor that came to mind and an example as you were talking about like your experience with healers. So I just had my very first debut solo art show open this month at a lovely community museum called Sandy Spring Museum, which is a regional Folklife Center of Cultural Heritage in the DC metro region, which is my adopted home in this time. And well, you know, the term solo show, which is a very art world term, nothing is solo, you know. So I feel like even when art shows say solo, I feel like, ew, like where did, like nothing comes on its own, but like one to acknowledge like that my solo show is very unsolo as the rest of my life. And so, you know, when I was preparing for it, it has an interdisciplinary body of like folk art practice, which is rooted in eco-folk art traditions of India. It has eco-poetry about my dreams and visions. And if we have time, maybe I'll share one, which I feel it's very relevant to our conversation. And my hope is your listeners may find it resonant. So, and then it also has, I made my very first like tapestry on an upcycled sari fabric. And then I have an outdoor tree grove called Yakshini's Dream, which is to honor my relationship. And I feel the larger collective relationship with trees. So it's a sacred tree grove, which is rooted in both adoration and adornment of trees. So it has all these pieces. And, you know, so one is art making. I love to paint. I love to write. Like every corner of my house is filled with poem seed. Poems everywhere. Phone, napkins, you know, fridge. I keep a, you know, notebook next to my bed. There's a notebook next to like the bath, because who knows when a poem will come flying. You have to write it. Otherwise, I have to keep chanting it. So I don't forget. And I love to paint. Oh my God, my soul is like so happy when I'm painting. I love coloring. You know, it's just, and happily so, I own my childlike sense of wonder, you know, and gleeful joy. Like sometimes when I'm painting, I'm like, oh, it's so beautiful. I don't know. But so I love making. So I relate to that. And then when I was preparing for this show, you know, I have to frame the artworks. There are frames that I upcycle, again, being conscious of carbon footprint and well-being tied to Mother Earth. So not to just talk about it, but practice it. And then I have frames in multiple sizes. And initially what happened, Kara, I realized that I had this energy around, oh, I have to frame. And then I had to fall in love with framing, you know, like putting D-rings, putting the wire, aligning. And it is, I feel, my metaphor for what you are saying to, like, for me to not also do it with the ick energy. Like, I have to do it. No, like, if my work is deeply sacred to me, and all parts of it are sacred, you know, for me, my work is to, like, fall more deeply in love with the parts which are maybe not my default childlike gleefulness. So deepen my relationship as the metaphor of framing, or, you know, I had to price my artworks, Kara, you know, and that is also for me, it's an ongoing practice and learning and unlearning, I confess, because art, which is such a sacred practice to me, and yes, very much in the capitalist frame of the world, you know, I want to share my work with the world. So I spoke to so many artist friends, and I referred to so many, like spoke to the exhibition curator, did a lot of research on how to price my original art. And then access is really important to me as well. So I'm still
Like, I want to this year start an online shop, and I don't want to do limited release anything. You know, isn't that also, that's a thing in the art world, limited release. I just don't like that scarcity language and what it conveys. I think I'm going to have special release prints, and they may go till infinity. So, you know, that not what one does, but how one does it also matters, you know? And then I'm still researching, you know, like, I want to set up my shop this year. Like, okay, what should I offer if I do like special prints, and what materials can be sustainable, and how can I make it accessible? Because some of my paintings, even I can't afford. So, and yet I need to survive, right? And not from a place of greed, but both to survive and to thrive, not for hoarding and accumulation, but to even from a place of, I want to live reasonably well. Of course, reason means different things to different people, but yeah, like finish up, you know, the payments and that I have. And I also want to acknowledge, like, I'm really privileged because I have an incredibly supportive partner, you know. I want to contribute to abundance of our shared well-being, even though and the poem I'll share with you, I think the one I'll share with you is called Enough. So I am enough, I have enough, but what does it mean in this world that I want to be part of co-creating, to sell work without selling out, you know? Yeah. And like, so I'm very much, I would say I'm definitely not like a sage who has the answers, but I'm very much living through and going through, you know, like all these, like the practical aspect of business as a bee and a lover of bees, you know, how do I do my art buzzings in a way that feel aligned? I worked also with like a coach, I remember during early part of the pandemic, like, you know, like she was talking, I think all well-meaning, but like they say, oh, you should have a hook. Oh, I also don't like that language, hook. Ah, like, I am even vegetarian. I don't even eat fishes, and I don't want to hook anything, you know?
Maybe there's a different, I mean, as a poet, maybe there's a different word, like maybe invitation is the word. Like, how do you invite people?
And I believe in electromagnetism. We are all electromagnetic, but that's what, like, I feel words matter, right? So one is what we are trying to do in these, while inhabiting, you know, like also like so people like to say my head, heart, you know, is head, heart, and that's disembodied. So what does it mean from my wholeness to inhabit and embody all these parts of being an artist in a world which is not substantially designed for it? Some of us are working to reimagine it and inhabit new and old ways of being, you know, to create the future in which we can together thrive. And yet we are also, we are trying to undo this world while being in it. What does the beautiful undoing mean while you are in this world, you know?
Yeah, I think too, with what you're saying, I just want to share again for my audience, like reimagine how you do business. I became a business coach coming off of an intersectional feminist degree. Like, I don't have an MBA. I became a business coach because I disagreed with a lot of what I was being taught, and I wanted to come up with a new practice and praxis and set of tools and ways of communicating similar ideas, which is why I say, you know, turn the hook into an invitation, turn the niche into a specialization. Like, marketing from authenticity and not from tropes. Like, there's so many ways that we can reimagine that. And we do live in capitalism. We are participating in these larger ecosystems that we both can't escape, and we also can't change if we escape them. And so when we get to reimagine the relationships that we want to have, yes, you still have to do things like look up your website hosting and like put the wires on the back of the paintings and price the art. We still have to do all of those things, but we can do it in a way that is a mirror for your deeper values and desires and how you'd like that work to impact people when they see it. And I would love to leave people with that and listen to your poem.
So much. Yeah, I feel this is, yeah, both in sharing and listening to you and the space between, you know, the words, I feel it's really powerful for me. So thank you for that. And I mean, to just pull out this poem, which I feel is a continued, really important reminder for my own self in my life. So I really hope it will remind both you and your listeners and myself in this sharing itself. So this poem, it's called Enough. Enough. I am enough. You are enough. We are enough. This room is enough. Enough sunrise constellations pouring from enough windows. This life is enough. Enough has been given. Blue skies, tree sculptures, cloud dancers, firefly fireworks. Enough tenderness of strange knowns and unknown strangers. Enough has been received. Lavender aromas, cricket lullabies, moonlight laughter, lingering loves. Enough. But the earth is burning because it is never enough. The remembrance of forgotten songs in my bones, enough. This canvas size to play with, enough. This space to be a space traveler of a new imagination, enough. This poetry balm on old, old new, new old, new, new wounds, enough. My needs, enough. The aftertaste of hunger satisfied, enough. Time we had enough, time we have enough. The moments of releasing the invisible chains, enough. Enough. In this world of more is forever less, you are good enough. The cloak of benevolent giving over cruel taking, enough. Enough gaslighting that made breathing in your presence shallow enough. Violence of your silence, enough. Enough is enough, enough already. I have had enough. Enough said, enough heard, enough gained. What we lost again in that gain, enough. We have been alone together, together alone, enough. There is a dance of death all around us, enough, enough. Let us finally live enough.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening enough. Thank you for sharing enough. Thank you, Kara.
You're also like re-inspiring me to reconnect to my poetry practice. So I appreciate that. And I want to just say thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
If people want to get in touch with you, maybe check out your online store and buy a painting when it goes up. Or for our listeners in the DC area, where would you like to send people?
Yeah, so I feel my website, nehamisrastudio.com, is the best way. And I share not an efficient Instagram presence, but in my own organic way. I'm also at Neha Misra Studio on Instagram. So if this conversation resonates with you, I would welcome, yeah, any notes or affirmations, because, you know, truly, like I've been saying, this learning, unlearning journey is, it's collective, you know, unfolding. So yeah, and I hope in your own life you can inhabit your enoughness in the multitudes of shades of enoughness. Yeah, and my hope is, you know, one of my words for this year
usually have, I have one this year, I have more than one, is at its core about abundance. It is about, yes, being open to share what is sacred to one in meaningful, thoughtful, soulful ways. So I hope to have a store if I can keep working on myself enough.
You know? It's coming. You just got to put in the wires on the back of the canvases, just a different medium.
So I will. Yes, this is it. I shall do it. So thank you, Kara. And thank you all the business witches and witchery, magic humans and beings listening to this. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll put all of those links in the show notes so you can go check them out there. And as always, we appreciate you sharing your day with us. We'll be back next time. Bye for now.